Okay, Kings of the Jews. That's our class. And last week we talked about the dividing of the kingdom between Rehoboam, who was king of Judah, and Jeroboam, king of Israel. We talked about the fact that 10 of the tribes were taken to Israel, to the northern kingdom, to Jeroboam. And as a result of the sin of Solomon and the sin of the nation under Solomon. And so as a result of that, we talked about the fact that Rehoboam was inclined to try to fight to keep them, but the prophet told him not to fight. And he listened to that. He did not fight. He let those 10 tribes go without a fight because God said, "This is my doing." And so we talked about that. So today, We're talking about the next two kings of Judah. That'll be Abijah and Asa, kings of Judah. And then Nadab, Baasha, Elah, Zimri, Omri, the kings of Israel. And I have a typo in this. Elah is supposed to have an H on the end of his name. I noticed that this morning. But the slides were already up, so that's what we get. So anyway, if you recall my favorite slide here. We are right over here, and so here's Asa. We've talked about Jeroboam. We've talked about Rehoboam. We're now going to talk about Abijah, this little pink line here, orangish, and this green Asa. So green, remember from the scale of good to evil. We have good, kind of good, better than average, worse than average, kind of bad, and pure evil. Okay? And so you can see that we're going to get to a pretty good king and a pure evil king. All right? So, but that's going to be kind of our thing. And the other, just to remind you again, we have over here the prophets that prophesied to various kings. So you can, as you go through, these blue ones are just prophets that are mentioned in the text as they prophesied to different kings in different situations. The purple ones, if we get to them, we won't get to those today, but those are actual prophets that wrote a book in the Bible. And so we'll see where they were, and it helps you understand those prophets when you see what was going on, who they were talking to. So this is a chart you can use in your Bible study. Cynthia Coles has got a, she's turned it into a bookmark. And she folds it in half, and it's a pretty awesome, laminate it, have fun, whatever you want. If you decide you don't like the colors that I have chosen, you can get your highlighter out and, go to work. All right, because these colors are not inspired by God. They're basically deduced from what's inspired by God, hopefully. All right. So we're going to start out with Abijah. We're going to start out on the king of Judah's side. And we're going to start with Abijah, starting in 1 Kings 15, verse 1. In the 18th year of the reign of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, Abijah became king of Judah. And he reigned in Jerusalem 3 years. His mother's name was Maacah, daughter of Abishalom. He committed all the sins his father had done before him, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord, as to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his forefather had been. So here we have Abijah. He committed all the sins that Rehoboam had committed, basically. And Rehoboam, and then Solomon before him, right? So he was not what you'd call a good king. That's why on the chart we had him as kind of the light orange. We'll see that there's some good in him, but there was also, the net assumption of him was he was not fully devoted to the Lord his God. Okay? But one of the things we find out, he only reigned for 3 years. So there's not a whole lot in the text about him, but in 2 Chronicles chapter 13, there's an interesting account of a battle between between Judah and Israel. 2 Chronicles 13, starting in verse 3, says, Abijah went into battle with a force of 400,000 able fighting men, and Jeroboam drew up a battle line against him with 800,000 able troops. Those are very large numbers. Some people have speculated that they're not, that somewhere along the line the translations got confused. But those, they do actually pretty well correspond to the number of able fighting men in those two nations. So it's maybe just talking about the total size or the potential size of the army. We don't know, but we just know what it says. And it says he had a force of 400,000 and going up against the force of 800,000. Okay, Abijah's war with Jeroboam. We continue. He gets up. So they're getting ready. They're lined up for battle. And Abijah basically speaks out to the enemy. I guess from the side of a mountain or something. He says, Abijah stood on Mount Zemaraim. Zemaraim, I guess that's right. Mount Zemaraim in the hill country of Ephraim, and said, Jeroboam and all Israel, listen to me. Don't you know that the Lord, the God of Israel, has given the kingship of Israel to David and his descendants forever by a covenant of salt? Yet Jeroboam, son of Nebat, an official of Solomon, son of David, rebelled against his master. Some worthless scoundrels gathered around him and opposed Rehoboam, son of Solomon, when he was young and indecisive and not strong enough to resist them. Okay, this is how Abijah paints the picture. What you're getting here is Abijah's representation of reality, which was, as you'll see later, is not entirely reality. But, you also see that God eventually honored him, or at least, supported him in this battle. 2 Chronicles 13, going on to verse 8, he says, and now you plan to resist the kingdom of the Lord, which is in the hands of David's descendants. You are indeed a vast army, and have with you the golden calves that Jeroboam made to be your gods. And he's kind of mocking them, these things that he made, you've got them, you think they're going to win. But he says, but didn't you drive out the priests of the Lord, the sons of Aaron, and the Levites, and make priests of your own as the peoples of other lands do? Whoever comes to consecrate himself with a young bull and seven rams may become a priest of what are not gods. He's mocking them for their idolatry and for their ignoring the law. Verse 10, as for us, the Lord is our God, and we have not forsaken him. So he says, right? That's what he says. The priests who serve the Lord are sons of Aaron, and the Levites assist them. Every morning and evening they present burnt offerings and fragrant incense to the Lord. They set out the bread on the ceremonially clean table with light and light the lamps on the gold lampstands every evening. We are observing the requirements of the Lord our God, but you have forsaken him. God is with us. He is our leader. His priests, with their trumpets, will sound the battle cry against you. Men of Israel, do not fight against the Lord, the God of your fathers, for you will not succeed. Okay, kind of he said some good stuff in there. You hope that it's true, but he said some good stuff. And then they go on into the battle. Verse 13, Jeroboam had set an ambush around to come up on them from behind. Thus his troops were in front of Judah, and the ambush was behind them. And when Judah looked, and behold, the battle was in front of them and behind them, they cried out to the Lord, and the priests blew the trumpets. Then the men of Judah raised the battle shout. And when the men of Judah shouted, God defeated Jeroboam and all Israel before Abijah and Judah. Okay, so what we know was happening in Judah at this point, yes, they were, at least following some parts of the law. They hadn't completely stopped following any of the law. They were still trying to do the ceremonial things. But on the other hand, they also had the idolatry going on. That never stopped, the stuff that happened during Rehoboam. And yet, God said, okay, because they relied on me, I will defend them. Okay. So the victory comes. In verse 16, the Israelites fled before Judah, and God delivered them into their hands. Abijah and his men inflicted heavy losses on them, so that there were 500,000 casualties among Israel's able men. The men of Israel were subdued on that occasion, and the men of Judah were victorious because they relied on the Lord, the God of their fathers. You see that? Because they relied on the Lord. I mean, we're going to find out as we go through the kings that when a king relied on the Lord, God was there for them. But when they abandoned the Lord, when they went to, treaties with other nations and so forth, God didn't. God didn't appreciate that. Okay. But here, they relied on him. He came out and said all that stuff to them. And God gave them victory. Okay, and yet, back in 1 Kings 15, it says, he committed all the sins of his father had done before him. His heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David his forefather had been. So if he committed all the sins his fathers before him had done, you know, here in this the box at the bottom, I've got the things that we saw with Rehoboam, right? These are the things that Rehoboam was guilty of. You know, he abandoned the law. You know, they built the high places and worshiped there. They had sacred stones. They had Asherah poles. They had shrine prostitutes. So this was a, you know, it's not like they were pure, you know, loving God, serving God, doing God's will in every way. But they were depending on God in this battle, and God, in this case, he gave them victory. All right, so what happened after Abijah? So 1 Kings 15, verse 8. And Abijah rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, and Asa, his son, succeeded him as king. In the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Asa became king of Judah. And he reigned in Jerusalem 41 years. His grandmother's name was Maacah, daughter of Abishalom. So they always give you these kind of comparison. You know, what was happening to the king? At what point during the kings of Israel did this guy become king of Judah? Or they'll say, at what time during the reign of the king of Judah did this guy become king of Israel? So, you know, it's a little confusing if you don't follow it. I think the chart helps with that. But basically, here, this is during still the reign of Jeroboam when Asa became king of Judah. And he reigned for 41 years. Verse 11, Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as his father David had done. Well, that's a great thing. You know, you don't hear that very often in these books. So he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 12, he expelled the male shrine prostitutes from the land, and he got rid of all the idols his fathers have made. He even deposed his grandmother, Maacah, from her position as queen mother because she made a repulsive Asherah pole. Asa cut the pole down and burned it in the Kidron Valley. Although he did not remove the high places, Asa's heart was fully committed to the Lord all his life. So some pretty impressive reforms brought out by Asa, whose father and grandfather had gone into idolatry. But he got rid of it. So God sends a prophet to instruct Asa in chapter 2 Chronicles 15:1. The Spirit of God came upon Azariah, son of Oded. He went out to meet Asa and said to him, "Listen to me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you when you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you." Okay, so we've heard that before, right? And that's sort of one of those favorite verses that we pull out. But this is where it fits in. So you've got this reformer that came in. He's getting rid of all these idols. He's, we'll see some more big reforms he does in a little bit. But you know, so the prophet is telling him, you need to stay with him. Don't forsake him. And he will be with you. Okay. Verse 7. But as for you, be strong and do not give up, for your work will be rewarded. That's a nice thing to hear, right? You know, do what's right. You're going to be rewarded. Verse 8, when Asa heard these words and the prophecy of Azariah, son of Oded, the prophet, he took courage. He removed the detestable idols from the whole land of Judah and Benjamin and from the towns he had captured in the hills of Ephraim. He repaired the altar of the Lord that was in front of the portico of the Lord's temple. Verse 9, then he assembled all Judah and Benjamin and the people from Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon who had settled among them, for large numbers had come over to them from Israel when they saw that the Lord God was with him. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing. You know, you had these two nations. You know, one of them was led by, you know, basically into idolatry. And the other one was at least trying to, and here he's doing reforms to try to follow the Lord. And so the people that were over in the northern kingdoms, in Israel, there were still people over there who wanted to follow God. And when they did, they came over to Judah. So he's now got an assortment of people from different tribes that have come over. And he assembled them all with Judah and Benjamin to have an assembly to devote themselves to the Lord. Verse 10, they assembled at Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of Asa's reign. At that time, they sacrificed to the Lord 700 head of cattle, 7,000 sheep and goats from the plunder they had brought back. They entered into a covenant to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and soul. All who would not seek the Lord, the God of Israel, were to be put to death, whether small or great, man or woman. That's a different kind of evangelism strategy, right? You know, I don't think that's something that we ought to be thinking about, but that's what he did. I mean, he was serious. You know, you could say deadly serious about getting this country, this nation, to follow and seek God. So this was a huge reform, you know, calling the whole country into this covenant. So, you know, we've got a sort of something requiring explanation here. In chapter 14, verse 5, 2 Chronicles 14, 5, it says, "He removed the high places and incense altars in every town in Judah and in the kingdom, and the kingdom was at peace under him." Then in chapter 15, 2 Chronicles, it says, "Although he did not remove the high places from Israel, Asa's heart was fully committed to the Lord all his life." You know, at first glance, you might think, wait a minute. sounds like a contradiction. But no, what it says is he did remove the high places from many parts, from the towns of Judah, from towns that he had conquered. But he didn't go out through the whole nation of Israel and eliminate all the high places there. So there were still high places, you know, maybe in the countryside, maybe certainly in the northern kingdom. So, but he did. It says, bottom line was he was fully committed to the Lord all his life. But there was a downside, even with Asa. The reason that he's not bright green and that he's a kind of good, sort of good. Okay, 2 Chronicles 16, starting in verse 1. "In the 36th year of Asa's reign, Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and fortified Ramah to prevent anyone from leaving or entering the territory of Asa, king of Judah." So it's kind of like he's going to put the country under siege. He's going to seal them off so people can't come and go. He's basically starting, you know, a threat to Judah. Verse 2, "Asa then took silver and gold out of the treasuries of the Lord's temple and of his own palace and sent it to Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, who was ruling in Damascus. 'Let there be a treaty between me and you,' he said, 'as there was between my father and your father. See, I am sending you silver and gold. Now break your treaty with Baasha, king of Israel, so he will withdraw from me.'" So he's going to Damascus to get the king there to get him out of his fix, right? Now, how do you think, does that sound like a good idea? You know, I mean, from a humanistic point of view, it sounds like, you know, that's a plan. But that wasn't something that God approved of. Verse 7, at that time, this is 2 Chronicles 16, 7. "At that time, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, 'Because you relied on the king of Aram and not on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Aram has escaped from your hand.'" There were consequences, right? God would have done better for them than that. He says in verse 8, "Were not the Cushites and Libyans a mighty army with great numbers of chariots and horsemen? Yet when you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. You have done a foolish thing, and from now on you will be at war." Asa was angry with the seer because of this. He was so enraged that he put him in prison. At the same time, Asa brutally oppressed some of the people. So, you know, this is kind of a tragic thing towards the end of his life. You know, he was relying on the king in Damascus rather than on the Lord, and as a result of that, he was going to be at war. And when the prophet told him that, how did he respond? You know, do we ever respond that way when somebody points out what we've done that's wrong? You know, that's it's easy to get down on Asa, but think, you know, turn around and think about yourself. How do I respond to correction? We all need correction sometimes, right? Okay, so how I respond to it makes a difference. And here, Asa didn't respond very well. He was angry. He put the messenger in prison, right? The seer, the prophet. And at the same time, Asa brutally oppressed some of the people. All right. So what else happened? So in verse 12, 2 Chronicles 16:12, in the 39th year of his reign, this is like 3 years later, Asa was afflicted with a disease in his feet. Okay. Though his disease was severe, even in his illness, he did not seek help from the Lord, but only from the physicians. Then in the 41st year of his reign, Asa died and rested with his fathers. So his last 2 years, he had a severe disease in his feet. You know, he ended up taking his life, but it was because he did not seek help from the Lord, only from the physicians. Again, he had started to rely on man instead of God. Okay, and you know, such a tragedy. And yet, you think about it. Think about it for yourself. You know, do you rely on the Lord for your to get you out of your trouble? Do you wait for the Lord to solve this problem, or you try to take it into your own hands and go find somebody to make it right for you? You know, take it. Yes, you know, it's better to wait for the Lord. You know, we see so many passages about that. But here, Asa took matters into his own hands. He went and found people, human beings, to help him, and as a result, it didn't work out. But his legacy was largely a good king. He was a good king. If you look at the sins of his predecessors and compare them to his reforms, I mean, we saw last week that Rehoboam abandoned the law, but Asa had the whole nation take an oath to seek the Lord. Okay, we find that Rehoboam built the high places, but Asa eliminated them. They had the sacred stones, idolatry, that Asa got rid of. The Asherah poles, he cut down his grandmother's Asherah pole, deposed her. The shrine prostitutes he expelled. So some great things, some reforms from Asa. But he had some failures in the latter years. He had the treaty with Aram. He had he imprisoned Hanani the seer. He was brutal towards the people. And then he failed to seek help from the Lord in his disease. So what's the net of all that? 2 Chronicles 15:7 says, although he did not remove the high places from Israel, Asa's heart was fully committed to the Lord all his life. So yeah, I guess we just have to say he was a good king with some failures, right? He doesn't get bright green, but he gets green. That's my assessment of it. All right, so let's go over to the Israel side. We'll talk about Nadab. Nadab was the son of Jeroboam. Okay, so chapter 15, verse 25 says, Nadab, son of Jeroboam, became king of Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah. And he reigned over Israel 2 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, walking in the ways of his father and in his sin, which he had caused Israel to commit. Okay, a bunch of idolatry, basically, right? Verse 27, 1 Kings 15:27. Baasha, son of Ahijah, the house of the Issachar, plotted against him, and he struck him down at Gibbethon, a Philistine town, while Nadab and all Israel were besieging it. Baasha killed Nadab in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, and succeeded him as king. Verse 29. As soon as he began to reign, this is Baasha, he killed Jeroboam's whole family. He did not leave Jeroboam anyone that breathed, but destroyed them all according to the word of the Lord given through his servant Ahijah the Shilonite, because of the sins Jeroboam had committed and had caused Israel to commit, and because he provoked the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger. You remember the prophecy, and we looked at it last week, when God said that the dogs would eat those who died in the city, and the birds of the air would eat those who died in the country, because he was going to wipe him out and all his descendants from the face of the earth because of the sin that Jeroboam had brought about. Well, here's where he does it. Baasha does it. So Baasha, was he a good guy? Well, God used him to accomplish what he had prophesied. But in verse 33, it says, in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, Baasha, son of Ahijah, became king of all Israel in Tisra, and he reigned 24 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, walking the ways of Jeroboam and in his sin, which he caused Israel to commit. So even though he wiped out Jeroboam's family because of that sin, he continued in the same sin. Okay? It wasn't an act of righteousness when he wiped him out. He was carrying out God's judgment, but that didn't mean that he was being righteous. Baasha, chapter 16, verse 1. Then the word of the Lord came to Jehu, son of Hanani, against Baasha, another prophet. Okay, I lifted you up from the dust and made you leader of my people of Israel, but you walked in the ways of Jeroboam and caused my people Israel to sin and to provoke me to anger by their sins. So I am about to consume Baasha and his house, and I will make your house like that of Jeroboam, son of Nebat. Dogs will eat those belonging to Baasha who die in the city, and the birds of the air will feed on those who die in the country. So the same verdict for Baasha that he gave to Jeroboam. And why? Because he was doing the same evil, right? God's consistent. You know, he was going to do the same thing to Baasha that he did to Jeroboam. Verse 8. In the 26th year of Asa, king of Judah, Elah, son of Baasha, became king of Israel, and he reigned in Tisra 2 years. Zimri, one of his officials, who had command of half of his chariots, plotted against him. Elah was in Tisra at the time, getting drunk in the home of Azra, the man in charge of the palace at Tisra. Zimri came in, struck him down, and killed him in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah. Then he succeeded him as king. So Zimri comes in and kills Elah, son of Baasha. So this is the beginning of fulfilling that prophecy against Baasha. All right, he has killed Elah. Verse 11, as soon as he began to reign, this is Zimri, and was seated on the throne, he killed off Baasha's whole family. He did not spare a single male, whether relative or friend. So Zimri destroyed the whole family of Baasha in accordance with the word of the Lord, the word of the Lord spoken against Baasha through the prophet Jehu, because of all the sins Baasha and his son Elah had committed and had caused Israel to commit, so that they provoked the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger by their worthless idols. Okay. Idolatry. I mean, I hope you're getting the picture now how God feels about idolatry. Right? He wiped out. This is the second dynasty of kings in Israel that he completely wiped out because of idolatry. Okay. Verse 15 in the chapter 1 Kings 16:15. In the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, Zimri reigned in Tisra for how long? 7 days. I think he holds the record for the shortest reign in Israel. Okay, 7 days. The army was encamped near Gibbethon, a Philistine town. When the Israelites in the camp heard that Zimri had plotted against the king and murdered him, they proclaimed Omri, the commander of the army, king over Israel, that very day on the camp. Verse 17, then Omri and all the Israelites with him withdrew from Gibbethon and laid siege to Tirzah. When Zimri saw that the city was taken, he went into the citadel, the royal palace, and set the palace on fire around him. So he died because of the sins he had committed, doing evil in the eyes of the Lord and walking in the ways of Jeroboam and in the sin he had committed and had caused Israel to commit. So if he reigned for 7 days, he didn't have time to do a lot as king, but apparently he had been worshiping those idols just like everybody else, and now he's king of Israel, and he had been, you know, a leader in Israel and had been doing those same things. So God destroyed him, and so we're back to our favorite slide again. So where are we now? So we've been coming down, you know, of course we talked about Abijah and Asa, then we came down here, we were talking about Nadab, Baasha, Elah, and Zimri. Zimri doesn't really even get color here. He's too narrow. He's just this black line here. It's 7 days. But then when you see what's coming up next, right, is Omri. And that's where we'll talk about Omri. That'll be the last thing we talk about today. But you can see that we're heading into an evil, evil king, even more evil than the ones we've seen. Verse 23, 1 Kings 16:23. In the 31st year of Asa, king of Judah, Omri became king of Israel, and he reigned 12 years, 6 of them in Tisra. But Omri did evil in the eyes of the Lord and sinned more than all those before him. See, I'm justified in giving him red, okay, because he's more evil than the orange, right? All right, more than all those before him. He walked in all the ways of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, and in his sin, which he had caused Israel to commit. So they provoked the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger by their worthless idols. So let's talk about what happened as a result of Omri. He was the father of Ahab, who you'll get to hear about next week from Jeff. Jeff Mueller is going to pick up next week. But he was father of Omri, and then Omri was the father of Ahab. Then you have Ahaziah and Joram, and you have this interesting woman named Athaliah. Sherry, if you'd flip back a couple of slides, just so we can point to it. What we have here is, it's in there somewhere. There. Okay, so what you have here is Omri, you have Ahab, you have Ahaziah, and Joram. Okay, now I've got Joram a little lighter color. You could argue that one should really be the same orange as these guys, because he did the same evil. But he did, what happened was Omri and Ahab brought Baal worship into Israel. Okay, and in fact, enacted legislation about it. Apparently had laws that basically compelled people to worship the idols. And then Azariah was continuing into evil, and Joram kind of backed off from Baal worship. He did everything else, so you could say, yeah, he did everything that Jeroboam did, so he should be the same color. But he did at least back off from one of the idols. So I said, okay, I'll give him credit for that. But you could disagree with that. You know, make your own slides. Make a bookmark and bring out your highlighter. All right, but that's that. But now, what about this Athaliah? Athaliah is over here in Judah. Athaliah is a descendant of Omri. Okay, and she wound up over here. We'll find out later that she attempted to kill off the whole line descended from David. And Joash was basically snarfed away and hidden and saved. And that's how he became king. So you'll hear about that in a few weeks. But that's Athaliah, actually a descendant of Omri, bringing that evil over here into Judah. Okay. So this is the legacy that we're going to find from this Omri guy. All right. So let's go back to that slide, and we'll go to the next one. So that's what... one of the things that is interesting to look at in Micah... The book of Micah, we find a prophecy where God is saying that the people of Judah were acting just like Omri, just like the nation under Omri, nation of Israel. And because of that, they were going to be punished. All right? This is shortly before, this is basically a prophecy of Nebuchadnezzar coming in and wiping them out. But in Micah 6, verse 16, it says, You, being Judah, have observed the statutes of Omri, and all the practices of Ahab's house, and you have followed their traditions. Therefore, I will give you over to ruin, and your people to derision. You will bear the scorn of the nations. So, you know, what were the statutes of Omri? We don't exactly know. We do know that Omri and Ahab introduced Baal worship. But here's what pulpit commentary says about it. It says, the statutes of Omri. The statutes are the rules of worship prescribed by him of whom it is said that he wrought evil in the eyes of the Lord and did worse than all that were before him. No special statutes of his are anywhere mentioned, that's in Scripture, but he is named here as the founder of that evil dynasty which gave Ahab to Israel and the murderous Athaliah to Judah, okay, as we just saw. The people keep his statutes instead of the Lord's. That's the pulpit commentary. Matthew Henry commentary says, Jeroboam caused Israel to sin by temptation, example, and allurement. But Omri did it by compulsion. You know, he passed laws. He had statutes. So, you know, the increase of evil with Omri. So what was Omri's legacy? Again, this is from Matthew Henry commentary. He says, he made himself famous by building Samaria, which ever after was the royal city of the kings of Israel. So Samaria and then Samaritans after that all drew their name from what Omri did. Okay, he made himself infamous by his wickedness, for he did worse than all who were before him, more profane, more superstitious, greater persecutor than either the houses of Jeroboam or Baasha. He did establish a dynasty that lasted for several generations, but ultimately they were dealt with also. So verse 28, 1 Kings 28, Omri rested with his fathers and was buried in Samaria, and Ahab his son succeeded him as king. And that's where we'll pick up next week. So here's where we are again, right here. We just had Omri. We're getting ready to launch into Ahab, and so Jeff Mueller will be teaching for the next 2 weeks, and then after him, and he's going to be basically talking about the time period where Elijah was the prophet. So you'll be hearing about the kings and some about Elijah. And then after him, Harold McCurdy is going to teach, and he's going to talk about Elisha and the kings that he was prophesying towards. So that's kind of what's coming up next. And then after that, you'll hear some from, I think, from Jeff, and some from Perry. Perry's coming up in, is it April? Is that right? So we got a series coming up, and then I'll come back at the end to wrap up. So this is my last stand for a little while. But that's our class for today. And go pick up your kids, and we will begin worship in about 10 minutes.